From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Pat Brady, Art Sear, Stephanie Hitt, and Salim Muakil. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. And tonight we're going to be talking more about the National Security Leak scandal and Edward Snowden. And again, we'll be looking for your telephone calls. And last week we began the discussion as to whether or not Edward Snowden is a hero or a traitor. And we also will throw in the word just whistleblower. So if you would like to weigh in on that, because the Edward Snowden saga continues. This past week, he was charged with theft of government secrets and also with espionage. And also he has left, as you know, Hong Kong, where he was ensconced for the last couple of weeks. And he's now in Moscow heading for perhaps Ecuador or some other countries. Art Sear joins us, A.W. Clawson professor at Carthage College. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Bruce.
Expert on the Soviet Union, having written books on the subject. Tell us, if you will, give us a short history as to how do you think this Edward Snowden NSA saga changes because of his movement from Hong Kong to Moscow and now perhaps points unknown.
It hurts relations between the U.S. and China, especially in the wake of the very warm shirt sleeve, no coat and ties mini summit out in the Palm Springs area between the president and counterparts from China. We already have a pretty seriously adversarial relationship with Russia, which has a long and interesting history of welcoming spies, including particularly notorious British spies during the 50s.
Pat Brady also joins us, a former chairman of the Republican Party in Illinois, now a public affairs consultant and head of his own company. Your reaction to the involvement now of Moscow in addition to the Chinese in this Snowden saga?
Well, dealing with the political side, which is probably what I know best, I think this is, as you were discussing before we came on tonight, this is an issue that enrages everybody on both sides of the political spectrum. So we'll see how this plays out in the upcoming elections. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer to see what impact it has on upcoming elections.
Let's go to Salim Muakil. Salim, senior editor of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals. Once upon a time, a member of the Black Panther Party, a spokesman for progressive causes. Mm. How does his hopscotching from Hong Kong with the involvement of the Chinese and now going to Moscow and at least the potential countries that he will go to are countries that are not familiar or friendly to the United States, with the possible exception of Iceland? How does that change the equation insofar as popular opinion might be regarding Edward Snowden?
Well, I think him being in Hong Kong from the beginning alienated a lot of people who looked at that as kind of a sop to the Chinese, especially when he revealed information about the hacking of the internet in China. Mm-hmm. So I think he was regarded with suspicion by a lot of people who have those kinds of suspicions anyway. Those who regard him as a hero of civil liberties, I don't think this changes their equation at all. For example, Julian Assange has been given sanctuary by the Ecuadorian embassy in London. So Ecuador has that reputation, and I don't think it hurts him among those folks.
Stephanie Hitt also joins us, another Republican. Thanks very much for being with us, an attorney. But my question to you is, the involvement now of WikiLeaks and lawyers for WikiLeaks assisting Edward Snowden, how does that change the popular opinion of him to some that he might have been a hero?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when it first happened, there was this cloak of whistleblower status given to him, and it came out at the same time that Americans were feeling frustrated with big government, with the IRS, with the intrusions from the IRS, and so on. So you had that as the backdrop. He has now changed that backdrop. It's no longer about whistleblowers. It's no longer about an encroaching or intrusive government or bureaucracies out of control. This has now escalated the issue, the prism through which we look through this, into international spying, China relations, Russia now is an
yes,
element.
Yes, but.
Nancy Pelosi was booed at Netroots this weekend when she referred to him.
And the WikiLeaks, I think a lot of people are going to feel less akin or are less compassionate towards him because he's now brought in this whole WikiLeaks aspect.
But and there is no evidence as of this moment that he has provided any information to the Chinese or the Russians.
True.
I mean, clearly, when someone steps out of line, the MO in this country with the involvement of the intelligence community is you besmirch and you destroy the reputation of the person that came forward. Now, I'm not saying that some of that is not worthy, but we don't have any evidence that he has done anything to specifically assist the Chinese or the Soviets at this moment.
Well, what's interesting is when he came out, the timing of his revelation, so to speak, also were on the coattails of not only the IRS, but also the situation involving the reporters on the NSA story.
And
the AP and the James Rosen at Fox. Right, and the fact that, you know, this Justice Department was looking at reporters as co-conspirators. So his revelations came at a time when he had a lot of sympathy and maybe even support from the press who were feeling burnt.
But again,
by this.
Art, I'm going to go back to you now. I mean, would you agree with my statement that right at this particular moment, we have no evidence that he has provided any unique information to the Chinese or the Russians other than having spent time in Hong Kong and now going to Moscow? He's on the run now because he wants to save his butt. That's part of it. Would you acknowledge that?
You're right. As far as we know, there's been no significant breach of national security secrets. That doesn't change the fact that he's apparently committed a felon and should be prosecuted on those terms.
That's a big leap, though.
Answering your question and related to your earlier one, it does take the heat off the Chinese. I was surprised that the Chinese government let him escape from Hong Kong and, in effect, slap
Washington. Well, they made Washington. They said that our extradition papers weren't in order.
Well,
and
yeah,
it was, I mean, it's excuse. I get it.
We have been very aggressive, and I do think Democrats tend to be more effective at that than Republicans. We've been very aggressive not only in human rights matters but also exposing Chinese efforts to hack into our national security system as well as plague their citizens with the Chinese firewall companies.
Okay, now
that's Celine, a complete answer to your question.
Okay,
a good one.
Well, thank you.
There's
a lot more coming.
No surprise there, bro.
Go ahead, Celine.
His whistleblower status, I think, is still intact. He's on the run because he looks at what happened to Bradley Manning when he tried to go through the regular channels, and also there were previous NSA whistleblowers who tried to go through regular channels, and they were stymied in their attempts to get the information out. Bradley Manning was actually tortured, according to the UN's rapporteur. So he's running away from that.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight, talking about Edward Snowden and the NSA. Where do you come down? Hero, traitor, or just a whistleblower? Back shortly. From Houston, Texas to Hollywood, Florida, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Stephanie, you wanted to follow up on the whistleblower discussion about Edward Snowden.
And whether or not part of it is that, the timing of his revelations coincided with a lot of public interest and even sympathy towards whistleblowers because we were on the heels of the IRS revelations as well as the Justice Department's revelations about wiretapping reporters and so on. And so that his timing in terms of public sympathy and public interest and press support for his position as a whistleblower was quite great. However, he did not choose to follow that path. He chose to flee Hong Kong and go the international route. I do believe that if he had come back here and faced charges as a whistleblower, he would have been afforded a tremendous amount of not only sort of public interest and protection, but legal protections and interests, specifically as a whistleblower.
I want to get reaction whether everybody agrees with it. I would say that, you know, this is the third week that we have done this story, because we went on the air about 2 hours after Edward Snowden was revealed. So this is show number three. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested to see whether there's been an evolution in the opinions of those who watch and listen to this program, as frankly as well as to myself. I mean, I do believe that in the initial reports, in reading that story in the Guardian, he was someone who was obviously moved because he saw something that was wrong.
Right.
Although, frankly, I was not surprised by his revelations. I don't think anyone should have been. I don't think any informed American should have been surprised.
Right.
I certainly don't think that any world terrorist network did not know that the United States has the ability to do these things. So they shouldn't be surprised by it. Now, the extent of it, that's a different story. Now, also, I don't frankly think that that too many people in the world should be surprised that if China is trying to hack into the United States, no one should be surprised that we wouldn't be trying to hack into them. Art,
right.
Should anybody be surprised at that?
No, we shouldn't be surprised, but that's not really the issue here. I don't like the term whistleblower. To me, it has positive connotations of some courageous soul low down in a polluting corporation or a tobacco company doing something that is not only professionally but physically at times courageous. And Hollywood can make a very profitable movie about the company as, you know.
So he's not Karen Silkwood.
Well, no, he's not. He's a mercenary. He was a very, very highly paid, very low-level corporate guy who was treated far too casually. There are very disturbing issues concerning the privatization of our military and security efforts, but this guy obviously, to me, he's a self-seeker. He was greedy. He wasn't getting the recognition he needed, so he decided to go public.
Where is the mercenary aspect?
Yeah, I don't think there's evidence of that. I mean, if anything, he gave up a pretty cushy job. I mean, he was earning
for something. Something possibly better. You asked about the Russians and the Soviet Union. I'm not a professional expert on the Soviet Union, but there's a long history of them treating defectors extremely well. You live extremely well. You're compensated well. Nice cars. Young women.
He's only going to be in Moscow for a stopover. I don't think they have, you know, they're going to really ply him with luxury.
But you're talking about this guy as some sort of selfless.
I think he's a traitor.
I think the guy's a traitor. He's been charged. He wasn't charged with treason, which is, I think, makes you death penalty eligible in this country.
Mm.
I don't see him as a hero or a whistleblower. This guy is just a guy that's doing a lot of damage to our country. I agree with you.
Let me stop here. Tell me why you think he's doing damage to the country.
The manner in which he did this. He's over now creating a huge international incident. Tensions.
He's leaking classified information.
What about the information he revealed? There are ways and mechanisms
to do that with not doing it the way he did it, and there are protections.
It's classified information. He's not the one to decide what to make public. The analogy with the Pentagon Papers in that sense is utterly inappropriate, as we like to say nowadays, and wrong.
And when he was hired, there was a background check, and I'm sure when he was
going apparently not enough.
Well,
there was probably something he signed saying classified. This is all confidential.
And the other thing, too, is he has hinted at, and The Guardian, the newspaper to which he's been revealing all of this.
And The Post
has come forward and said there is more information that he has. He has highly classified information, including there were some allusions to knowledge of the locations of CIA operatives and things like that, whether he actually has them or not.
Well, he turned it over to The Guardian.
He turned it over to these journalists because he wanted them to be scrutinized by journalistic minds,
so to speak. So he didn't want to release them.
Better ways to do it, though. Look where we are now.
But you know, have you seen the interviews with these three former NSA whistleblowers who attempted to reveal information and were ignored and dismissed, and their careers ruined.
You have a
Bradley Manning was.
Yeah, but at least they can live here.
from my prosecutor days, and I just, some of these folks that don't follow the rules, I don't have a lot of sympathy for. The substance, I agree with. There's problems here. We all recognize it, but I don't like the way that he has handled this.
So let me just summarize where I think you're at. Is if he would have done what he did, and he would have stayed in the United States to face the music,
right?
He would have been more of a hero.
To some.
Sure.
To Stephanie, he would have been, right?
Well, I don't know. I think he, you know, I don't agree with what he did. He signed confidentiality.
Well, he squandered the public appeal.
From a public perception point of view, mm-hmm. from sympathy, from his treatment, now he does look like a traitor. He's on the run.
A traitor to what?
He's a fugitive right now.
We're throwing strong words out. Where is he a traitor?
Well, he's acting as a traitor. I'm not saying he has actually done anything treasonous. However, he has decided to, you know, not come back to the U.S., face the, you know, he made a decision to come out with his information. And when you make those decisions, you face the consequences with that. He is not willing to face those legal consequences.
Okay, now let me ask Salim. Salim, would you acknowledge that if he is the man of principle that he purported to be, certainly in the first interview with The Guardian, that his case would have been stronger had he stayed back in the United States, faced the music? Because I don't think, you know, we can say whether he committed espionage or treason or whatever, all these other things. The one thing I think we could all agree to is he probably signed some confidentiality agreement working for the NSA or Booz Allen. Mm-hmm. So he has violated a contract,
and
he is viewed as a felon for having done that.
Absolutely.
That's why they pulled his passport.
He's a fugitive, no doubt.
He's a fugitive. Mm-hmm. Right. So take it to the next step.
He would have
been.
We're
a fugitive. Now, again, just take us through the thought process.
Okay.
When does a fugitive become a
traitor?
Possible traitor, right.
Well, when he releases information to a foreign government with the intentions of harming the security, the national security of this country. There's been no proof that he's done that. In fact, he's been scrupulous in applying and offering this information to journalists.
Does anybody have proof that he did? Art, you're a little disbelief.
It's classified information, for one thing. It's a serious crime that it was revealed. I'm a little surprised I turn out to be the one sounding most conservative here. That is a very serious crime. It is related to a major shortcoming.
Well, Art, every
I'm on board with you.
All of the information we have about, like, COINTELPRO, all of these intrusions into our civil liberties were revealed by people who had access to certain kinds of information that was deemed secret. And so I think that is the nature of being a whistleblower. You have to reveal these things. And if the governed don't have the knowledge of what is going on in their names, then this can't be a democracy.
How does this? I want to go back to your concern. How does this story now, and albeit, you know, the congressional investigations, obviously we're going to be deep in congressional investigations on this probably for the next several years, because certainly in 1974, when Seymour Hersh revealed on the front pages of the New York Times about the government spying program, then it led to about almost 5 years of nonstop investigations, the Church Committee, the Assassinations Committee, and all of the reforms of the American intelligence, which questioned at the core of that, those Seymour Hersh stories were, there was agencies of the United States government that were spying on Americans. They had files. They were spying on them. How does this differ from that? It's the same revelation.
Well, first of all, please don't give Seymour Hersh too much credit. He also takes credit for revealing the My Lai massacre. Think of him as a hand car that gets in front of a major locomotive and goes in front of it and takes credit. He was not the principal source of revelation for either of those important stories.
My Lai, who was the...
Let's not get off on My Lai. The government spying program in the 1970s, who, other than Seymour Hersh and the lead stories in the New York Times, who should get credit for the revelations of those?
I think Daniel Ellsberg and the leaking of the Pentagon Papers is one source. There were other journalists. There was a whole series of information. There's a man named Ronald Ridenour who was a door gunner, I believe, on the American helicopter that interposed itself between Kelly's platoon and the
We're not talking about Mr. Ridenour, but you're meshing two stories. I'm talking about specifically about the government, the government program in 1974 that was revealed by the New York Times about the massive government spying on the American people.
Yes.
How does that revelation? And also the other revelation that part of that is, and I've said it, you know, umpteen times over the last 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. In 1975, Henry Hyde, a Republican member of Congress who was on the House Intelligence Committee, told me and my audience that the NSA in 1975 had the ability to listen in on every phone conversation in America at any time.
Yeah.
1975.
Well, actually, it started in the 60s. If I could give a complete answer to your very important question, the two are very comparable. But starting in the 50s...
You know, I'm going to stop you right now. I want to hear the whole story, but we're going to a break, and I want to give it to you uninterrupted. 1-800-723-8029.
I won't take more than an hour, Bruce.
And when we come back, I promise we're going to go to phone calls because they're chomping at the bit to get into this conversation. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce DuMont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Around the table, let us introduce Salim Muwakkil. He's the senior editor of In These Times. He's a talk show host for WVON Radio and also a longtime regular guest on Beyond the Beltway. Stephanie Hitt is one of our new regulars. She is a mother of four, and she is a chauffeur. She's a chauffeur of four.
Yes.
And she's also an attorney. And also joining us this evening is Art Sear, the A.W. Clawson professor that's at Carthage College in beautiful Kenosha, Wisconsin. Pat Brady also joins us, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, and now he's a principal in a new firm called Next Generation Public Affairs, also a former assistant U.S. attorney and former assistant state's attorney here in the county of Cook. We will go to calls at 1-800-723-8029 in just a moment. But Art Sear, I asked you a question. How does the investigations and the revelations of government spying in the 1970s, how does it differ from the story that is unfolding right now?
Back then, more agencies were involved with far less supervision. You're right, Bruce, as you usually are. With the electronics revolution of the 60s, the NSA had the capacity and exercised it to intercept electronic communications, telegraph as well as telephone, the government intruded in people's mail. At that time, we also had the CIA engaging in unauthorized collection of information about Americans that was illegal, the U.S. Army, specifically William Yarbrough, the Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence in the United States Army in the late 60s, initiated and justified a program which also was found to be illegal later on of surveillance of Americans. The church hearings that you've rightly emphasized led to the establishment of the FISA court, which has been strengthened and reformed during the Bush years, but a rotating panel of federal judges passes on these things. That was not the case back in the 60s. I believe President Obama has been effective in emphasizing to the American people that there is a trade-off between our freedom and security. You cannot have absolute freedom or absolute security.
You have historically, in describing that background and offering that analysis, you have also put in place that that story, when it broke, this was a journalistic break on a story. It dominated national news for over 5 years with the congressional hearings.
Frank Church.
It led to, with the church commissions. It led to all kinds of other stories because there was assassination investigations, all kinds of things, because of the distrust that the people had of their government. It started there. It started with this revelation where the CIA was involved with organized crime going to assassinate Fidel Castro. It got really dirty. But what I'm saying is that what came out of all that dirt, and we were airing our dirty laundry year in, year out, because of these congressional investigations. What came out of it was a system of judicial and legislative and executive branch oversight of intelligence that was supposed to have been cleaned up in the late 1970s, by the time the Church Committee information came out, it was 77, 78. And now here we are, umpteen years later, It seems to me we're about to go through that same cycle again. Only the big difference is that the technological advancement is so much greater than it was in 1975. There is that ability to listen in on phone conversations if the government wants to do it.
I think the times have changed. The times really were different. There was public alienation and hostility related to Watergate as well as the last stages of the Vietnam War.
Well, the alienation now was against the government and against the IRS and the way that the IRS has been politicized because of what they've done or two lowly people in Cincinnati were doing. And I don't think too many people buy that it was just two lowly people.
People are always upset with the government for one reason. I feel the atmosphere was different and much more hostile back in that era.
We're going to go to call Scotty. Listening to us on the internet in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Scotty. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I've called you before, Bruce. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Anyways, I'm a young man. I'm 21 years old. And, you know, this concerns me. It deeply concerns me. You know, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this, guys, and make it as clearly as possible for each and every one of you tonight. And please have an open mind here. Now, mankind and all of us, you and me, we're all being enslaved by the central banking cartel, and in order for them to protect their monopoly on credit creation, most of our political, economic, and cultural leaders constitute a colonial elite that serves the bankers' agenda. Terror is manufactured as a pretext to build this.
So do you believe, Scotty, I'm going to cut you off, do you believe that Edward Snowden buys into that philosophy and that's the real reason why he released this information?
I believe that the Rothschild central banking system has taken over America and the Federal Reserve isn't even federal. We don't even have the right to print our own currency anymore, for God's sakes.
All right, Scotty, thank you for your call. Scotty, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Tina.
It's a different subject.
Tina is calling us from Hoover, Alabama, listening to us on WAPI, the blowtorch of the South. Go ahead, Tina.
Hi, Bruce. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to comment that I don't believe that Edward Snowden had a choice to go through the whistleblowers, and I can personally tell you that I have tried myself to report things that were inaccurate. All these records are secret, and it's against federal law for even an employee to tell you, like, if you're being tracked or on a watch list or whatever like that. And I know personally of having had my phone hacked, my car tracked, just very frustrating for several years. I've gone to one agency after another, the FBI, the local police, the Secret Service, Homeland Security, and I keep getting a blank page. The only thing I was told by one agency was that I could go to federal court, which I wouldn't begin to have the money to do all that.
Tina, because I'm going to move on, but because of your personal experience, do you view Edward Snowden as a hero or a whistleblower?
I consider him a hero and a whistleblower. I listened to the interview in its entirety, and you know, if the facts are as he presents them, I consider him someone who cares deeply about the future of America.
Tina, my question to you is, does his movement from Hong Kong to Moscow, and now apparently perhaps on his way to Quito, Ecuador, does that change your opinion in any way about Edward Snowden?
Only to the extent that if I didn't know what I'd already experienced, I believe that our government, I don't believe that they would give him a chance for a fair hearing, much less a fair trial, and I believe even his life is in jeopardy. I believe that he's not necessarily doing things that will betray our country just because he's going to these other countries. He could not go to our allies because they're under contract and treaties to turn him over.
Well, thank you for your opinion. And by the way, insofar as just as his as far as his personal security is concerned, he said this in the interview that, you know, obviously this is something that he fears, that the long arm of, intelligence can reach him wherever he happens to be. But also, you have to look at it from an intelligence perspective. There's a lot of people in this world, and not just members of the United States Intelligence Agency. There's a lot of people that, frankly, if something happened to Edward Snowden, most of the world would think that American intelligence was involved, even if Soviet intelligence was involved, or Ecuadorian secret police were involved. That is That is the other thing that, we have to deal with right now is there's a lot of people for their own political benefit that would like to see Edward Snowden off. And again, the American intelligence agencies perhaps are just some, and I'm not saying that they would do that, but again, you have to, when you're looking at the murky world of intelligence, you have to look beyond the obvious, and you have to look at the variation of gray. Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio. Morris is listening to us on WKBN. Nice to hear from Youngstown.
50 Shades of Gray.
And nice for you to drop by Youngstown a couple of weeks ago, Bruce.
It's always good to be there. Friends in Boardman and Columbiana County.
There you go. I just want to throw this out there, though. I mean, you know, as a child of the Cold War, I look at the Snowden situation, and I think about, what if this had happened during the Cold War years? What if some guy had spilled some beans like this, even if a lot of people think he was just doing a good deed, and then skip off to Hong Kong, which is a territory, basically, of Red China. Then from Red China, he goes to Russia, which was then the Soviet Union. I mean, I don't see how anybody can say this guy is a hero. And furthermore, I don't understand the paranoia. Bruce, I thought you made an excellent point in the last segment. Most people with a basic understanding of technology today surely knew the government could do these things. I mean, I can jump on Google Earth right now and look at anybody's house I want to.
Yep.
So to think the government can't do this, and not to mention that millions of Americans put all this information out there themselves on Facebook and
That's
Twitter
right.
and all those type of sites.
We have been seduced. Last week I said we have been seduced by technology. We've been seduced by technology to reveal our lives, and again, so we should not be surprised by the invasion of that privacy by government. Edward in Chicago listening to us on WLS, our flagship. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Bruce. Does your panel think that Mr. Greenwald might be facing any future charges by us?
Lawyer, Glenn Greenwald.
It's interesting. He's actually located, I think he's located overseas.
He's in
which
Brazil.
He's in Brazil. Right. And he's working for a UK newspaper, The Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, you know, there have been some hints about that. He is certainly... thrown that out there, made the assertion that he's basically daring people to call him a co-conspirator. I don't think so.
He challenged David Gregory on Meet the Press today,
exactly,
rather vociferously.
I don't think that there's any serious concern at this point that he might, because I think he's aware of the information. The Washington Post is aware of the information. I think that his public activity.
It's also, by the way, the other thing that he said today.
Greenwald.
What Greenwald said is that Snowden did provide a lot more information.
Right.
But those news organizations, The Post and The Guardian, both chose not to release information. He wanted journalists to look at that information and to decide what the public needs to know. He didn't go to WikiLeaks and get this out. He could have set up his own website and put this out. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for being with us. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. This past week, you may have seen President Obama on with Charlie Rose. And during that interview, there was a very interesting exchange. And it goes something like this. Barack Obama, the president, says, what I can say unequivocally is that if you are a U.S. person, the NSA cannot listen to your telephone calls and the NSA cannot target your emails. Then Charlie Rose says, and have not. And then the president comes back and says, and have not. They cannot and have not. By law and by rule, unless they, and unusually it wouldn't be they, it would be the FBI, go to a court and obtain a warrant and seek probable cause, the same way it's always been. End of quote. Now, I want to go back to the first part of that. The president says that we cannot listen in on calls. Now, that flies in the face of what I was told in 1975. Now, why would the president use the term cannot?
He was referring to statute, like a good lawyer, was referring to statute and procedure. But the president also, for good reasons, I believe, and I voted for Obama, seeks out friendly And there's nothing friendlier than Charlie Rose, friendlier one-on-one, kind of more interpersonal, if I may say, touchy-feely forms. He avoids press conferences for the reason you mentioned. He has trouble in adversarial situations, and you were being adversarial with the president right now, Bruce.
Salim, I am, because you know what? It seems to me that we have another president that's trying to, you know, parse words, and this was a guy that purported himself to be transparent. But wait a minute. That point where he says the United States cannot listen in is false. That is not a correct statement by the president of the United States.
Depends on what you mean by cannot.
Well,
if you're referring to policies and procedures.
Again.
But people are snoops. People are nosy. If an instant, we've all had this experience in life without dealing, my God, with intelligence agencies. There are people who abuse their authority. There are people who are nosy. And if there are files available and the technology available, a person will. There are people
there
who will
go.
Take advantage
and
of it.
And that was what we and talked about last week on this program.
Especially if you're hiring a for-profit corporation rather than a sensitive government agency, not because business people are worse, but Bill Donovan, when he was establishing the OSS during World War II, the precursor of the CIA, he didn't hire a corporate, he didn't hire an employment agency, he didn't hire executive searchers. It was very interpersonal, talking to men intensively. There should have been more women. There were a few. But it was not the kind of corporate procedure that has led to this disaster in which we ought to be discussing.
This is the Obama administration. They've been there for 6 years.
Salim, what is your response to the president's comments? Mm. Could you acknowledge that that was not the truth the president told?
Well, it was parsing words. You know, it was that
is
saying,
that what you thought you were fighting for when you?
No, not at all. And that's what's so disappointing and distressing about the president's presentation of all of this is that for someone who really claimed to be an advocate of transparency and even bragged that this would be the most transparent administration in history, he's really fallen pretty far on this, and it's extremely distressing because he comes from a tradition in which folks take civil liberties very seriously.
And how is this for those listening around the country? You're an African American. Who are those listening on radio that may not know that? Mm. But the question is, you also work for WVON Radio, which has a large African American population, one of the most popular African American talk radio stations in the entire United States.
That's right.
How do the African American community react to this story?
It's interesting, man, because traditionally, as I say, the African American has been on the forefront of the civil liberties struggle, and have and their fight for human rights really has been inspirational to folks in many other fields and many activists. And so when President Obama makes these kinds of compromises, and the people who supported him in many ways because of that tradition of struggle, it puts a lot of people in strange positions. It's a quandary for many in the African American community who support the president, and they don't want him to be perceived as a failure or as someone who's not up to the job. And yet, when they see this kind of violation of many of their principles, they have to figure out ways to justify it. And it's
Brady,
difficult.
What's your reaction? Is from a Republican hearing that?
I mean, I'd give my answer as a citizen. To me, it goes to just the competency of the administration. I don't think the president does himself any favors parsing words. And I know he's a constitutional law scholar. A lot of people are. But we need straight answers. And this is just, he's had a bad 2 weeks. He had a bad trip overseas. And this is just adding to it.
But we also, by the way, we also did not get a straight answer by the head of intelligence, James Clapper.
He lied.
When asked a specific question, he lied to Congress.
He did.
He lied to Congress, and now we have the president parsing words when he's on with Charlie Rose. It's simple question.
And it's all bad. And it's all bad for the country. And we have to stay on the subject, but there are so many issues going on in this country we need to get taken care of. And we're distracted by 5 years of hearings, and the president's not showing leadership. That's my response, not just as a Republican, but as a citizen. We want these things cleared up.
Stephanie.
Right, and I think part of it is that, there's polls out there. I mean, Americans understand. And if you get outside of the Beltway, and that's where we are right here, we are well beyond the Beltway. Americans are common sense people, and they understand, they understand that, of course, the capability is out there. That you would be a cave person not to know that the NSA doesn't have these abilities. And I think there's also this understanding that these are tools. These are things that they have to do. The president has not come forward and reassured Americans about that need, balanced with, yes, the true safeguards that we do have.
He should be on television. I mean, I think at this particular point, because this is an issue.
He should have been on television 10 days ago.
Well, he should have been.
And he should get the teleprompter away and start answering questions. And, you know, he's a smart guy. He can do it. But that's my point. It's a competency leadership thing.
He's unnecessarily dancing around words. Right. He doesn't have to.
We've got him and parsing them and right. not
he's constricted.
Telling the
he's constricted to, by the institutions. I think his impulses are to be more.
Watch your words. Words have meaning.
Recorded,
watch your
yes.
words. Don't say cannot, Mr. President, when you know damn well the government can. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly. If you're listening to us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we'll see you in a few moments. Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway tonight, featuring commentary by Pat Brady, Art Sears, Stephanie Hitt, and Salim Uwakil. Our toll-free line's open at 1-800-723-8289. We're talking about Edward Snowden. We're talking about the NSA controversy and WikiLeaks and a variety of other things. And I want to spend a little more time about WikiLeaks, and then we're going to go to California for a call. But again, in this particular case, did WikiLeaks attach themselves to Edward Snowden, or do you think Edward Snowden reached out to WikiLeaks? Salim, what do you think?
I think WikiLeaks, he may have consulted with some WikiLeaks people before he decided to do the deed, but I think after Greenwald publicized the story, I think that Julian Assange sought him out because he is right. of like mind, and he wanted to give him advice. And I think that's really the reason why he's going to Ecuador because
by doing that, doesn't Snowden, again, based on what we discussed in the first hour, doesn't he get sucked into this thought that maybe there's some ulterior motive, that maybe this reason why he revealed this information to the American people out of guilt and feeling, which was in that initial interview, isn't he now being allowed to be used by Julian Assange because it raises some doubts? Because, well, you know, there's a lot of people, I mean, as much as I would say Edward Snowden was maybe more of a whistleblower, I certainly wouldn't put Julian Assange or WikiLeaks into that category. I think their desires and their goals are far different.
No, I think they are of the same spirit. I mean, both of them, Assange thinks that the purpose of journalism should be to reveal secrets that the government would rather not reveal. And I think that Snowden fits right, he fits perfectly into that conception. I don't think it's a different spirit at all. And those who look at Assange as a villain may be convinced that Snowden is up to no good by connecting with him. But those who look at Assange as the new breed of journalism, as the kind of fearless spirit of journalism that it is intended
but
to
Assange
be.
But Assange named names. He was naming names. That takes it to a different level.
Well, he also took it to journalistic scrutiny. He also provided journalists an opportunity to scrutinize the information and make judgments on it.
Art, I want to come back to you because you're the closest thing to a foreign affairs expert that we have at the table.
Well, thanks, Bruce. I agree with that. Thank you.
I mean, everybody have their expertise. We have Justice Department. We have former Black Panther. We have progressive columnists. We have talk show hosts. We have a variety of people here. But my question to you is, tell us about Ecuador. Because that is where he is most likely to go, according as of this moment when we're doing this broadcast. Mm-hmm. Venezuela is another possibility, and also there's been talk of Cuba, and also, at least in the interview that Snowden gave 2 weeks ago, where he wanted to go was Iceland, which is a totally neutral country, not one viewed as hostile to the United States. What will he find? Tell us about Ecuador. Why Ecuador?
Well, there is the president of Mr. Assange, whom we've been discussing, and who I believe has been aggressively trying to attach himself to Manning, who may not be the swiftest guy around mentally. Ecuador is a very small country. It, like Venezuela, it has a left regime. It's one of the less consequential economies in Latin America. It's interesting, though, to me that he's apparently not going to Cuba, and North Korea hasn't been mentioned. If this really were the height of the Cold War, I think those countries would be more in evidence. I do believe he's being used by a variety of forces, including a well-organized and often well-financed coherent international network of people on the left who often tend to come from prosperous backgrounds. These aren't working people, have money at their disposal, and are internationally sophisticated. So there is a ready network of people. And there's some history of that going back to the Vietnam era. You were trying to draw analogies with the past. I think all of that, along with these very ruthless governments, including our own, are trying to make use of this guy.
But in one of these stories, at least, we talked about how he got out of Hong Kong. He got out of Hong Kong when, again, the papers, according to the Chinese, the papers that were filed by the Justice Department were missing. They were lacking specificity.
Well, that's baloney. That's what we call baloney in the foreign affairs field.
That's fine.
Beijing wanted to slap Washington.
And by the way, I'm just saying that was the reason that they gave.
Yeah, of course.
But again, he was a hot potato. They wanted to probably get him out of the country because they probably do want to.
Well, that's a good point as well.
Some of the points.
Yeah, and Moscow, again, in terms of history that I alluded to, a very ugly and very impressive history in negative
terms.
And
they love mischief.
They do, but they also have a very well-established tradition of espionage. And the British precedent going back to the 50s is extremely important. But also they rely heavily on human intelligence. This is another point I believe we should be discussing. We are so entranced with technology and so good at it that we have degraded human intelligence. I don't know what happened at Benghazi, but I do know it's a very, very alien environment. Western technology doesn't penetrate that human environment. I'm quite confident at this point in time we don't have agents on the ground. It's one reason I mentioned the OSS from the time when we were successful in the world.
But he also, in this particular case, he also was on Aeroflot Airlines because there was the fear that if he was on some other airline, they might have turned that airline around. So Aeroflot.
Certainly not out of time.
Wherever they fly.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, I feel like we're sitting here giving Mr. Snowden a lot of credit for maybe having thought all of this through.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, the way this is playing out, I don't know if it's something he really thought through all the ramifications.
Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder that myself.
So it makes him look more and more like a pawn for some other reason. Now that people are seizing his
back yourself into a corner.
Right.
And you know that the most powerful nation on earth and their long arm of intelligence and law want to get to you. You sometimes are forced into going into a different area, again, especially if you've not thought about it in advance. Although I would think that coming from an intelligence background, you would think that he would have thought out all of the ramifications.
I beg your pardon. He wasn't an intelligence agent. He was a contractor that was hired under casual. Yeah, no, this guy is not an intelligence agent.
He seems to fear the U.S. government more than he fears the Russians and the Chinese, which I find just baffling myself. So that's why I think, you know, he's willing to subject himself and let himself be led from Moscow to possibly Cuba to whatever.
I said during the last segment that that Mr. Snowden might fear for his life, but it may be other foreign governments that might want to off him because it will make the United States look like they were responsible for
right,
it.
Right.
Do you buy that, Pat? Does that make sense to you that maybe there's no one that wants to keep him more alive right now than U.S. intelligence?
I do buy it. It's common sense to take
the White House.
I'm not going to pretend to be a national security or foreign intelligence expert. I do have a little bit more faith in our government. I was not a supporter of Obama, and I didn't vote for him, but I'm not part of this conspiracy theory. I do believe that this goes on. It goes on all the time. It's been going on since 9/11, and the primary goal of the president, and I hate to find myself agreeing with Nancy Pelosi and or Dianne Feinstein, but we got to keep the country safe, and sometimes you do sacrifice some of your individual liberties. and listen, I'm a conservative guy, but we haven't been attacked. Some of these methods are not good. I'm sure we need to revamp it every 10 years. You need to do it, but keep the country safe.
But we need to have a discussion.
We've got to pause. I agree. We're having that discussion third week in a row. 1-800-723-8299. When we come back, there's other issues like immigration. Talking about that when we come back. And Syria. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8299 is the telephone number. Before the break, I said that we're going to move into some other issues. If you want to continue to talk about the Edward Snowden case and NSA, feel free to do so. But also, we're going to switch gears. But we do have callers standing by. Let's go to them right now. Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio. Tom is listening to us on the Big 57 WKBN. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce. Hey, first of all, I have to compliment your screener. The guy's really doing his job well. You know, as far as immigration is concerned, I think that, quite frankly, that's a bigger topic and a more important topic to this country than even Snowden. You and I, especially, and your guests and the listeners, can't do anything about Snowden. But we can do something about immigration, and we should. This idea of, 40,000 guards, I don't care if you have 40 million guards on the southern border. If the laws aren't going to be enforced by an administration or by an attorney general, then it's not going to make any difference. And as far as building a fence on the southern border, I really think that we're not going to see a fence within my lifetime and your lifetime, Bruce, and your guest's lifetime. The only fence that's going to be built is going to be on the northern border by Canada to keep the Latin American situation from going that much further.
Stay on the line, Tom. We're going to come back to you to do the button up conversation. But I want to ask from a political standpoint, Pat Brady, where do you think, how important is the resolution of this issue to the long term stability of the national Republican Party?
It's hugely important. And I'm glad to see the leadership shown even here by Senator Kirk. And some of the other people that have worked on this, right? I think it's hugely important that the Republican Party nationally put a face that we are actually a compassionate party. We care about the 11 or 12 million people that are here. We can't just throw 12 million sets of handcuffs on them. But like Senator Kirk did here in Illinois, we need to secure the border first before you're going to get his vote. And I think the vote's even up tomorrow. So I think it's a hugely important issue on a broader range of issues that we have to be seen as the party that can solve problems.
Stephanie Hitt, also a Republican. Same question to you.
Yeah, I think I agree with Pat. I think, securing the border is going to be key. I mean, we looked at, we all saw amnesty in 1986. And actually, surprisingly, there were a lot of similarities between what went on in 86 and now. And one of the components was border security, and it never really happened. And now we're where we are today. So the emphasis on border security is key. I think that's what's going to maybe stall it or hold it down in the House.
Would you agree with what Tom said that, the fence schmence, if you don't have the enforcement of people who are routinely and serial hirers of illegal immigrants, then you are not going to really solve this
right.
problem.
Actually, our caller, Tom, you took the words out of my mouth. I think he's completely right that it is a will. You can keep throwing money and money and money, and, someday there's going to be this funny-looking wall down there. But enforcement isn't just building the wall. It's going through.
But it's a
prosecution.
We're missing the point, though. I think, and you're talking about the hiring of people right. coming across the border. To me, it's a law enforcement issue on our out of control drug problem, particularly in a city like Chicago, has the gang problem. It does. To me, it's national security and a criminal issue. The other issue is important, but I'm less concerned about that than I'm securing it for other reasons.
But again, would you acknowledge though that the 700-mile fence and the hundreds of millions of dollars that's going to cost, that is the price for political votes. It isn't necessarily, without what Tom's talking about, without that enforcement of those that continue to hire, the fence is really more than just the price of getting the votes. It's really not going to have any significant difference.
It's the price for getting the votes in the Senate right now. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. Tom, are you still there?
And
yes. And Bruce, I know the last time I proposed this, you said that I brought the liberals and the conservatives together against the idea, but I'm going to throw it out there again and hopefully explain it a little bit better. If we had, with our Social Security number, which most Americans have or could easily get, if we combine that as a photo ID and computerized it, as the most states do, where it's a computerized system that a police officer can pull up the driver's license to see that it is valid, that that individual hand somebody. I mean, you wouldn't even have to have a plastic carry hand ID card. But if you had a computerized system that to get a job, to vote, to get any government benefits, that the person sitting across that table from the government employee would have to be a bona fide citizen of this country, I think you would dry up not only the illegals coming across the border, but the tourism visa overstays, the work visa overstays, the student visa overstays. If you dry up the economic means for them to survive in this country or to come to this country, then you're going to solve a great deal of that immigration problem. And quite frankly, Bruce, I'm fearful of this idea that of Republicans and Democrats appeasing a group of people for votes, as opposed to looking out for the national interest, not the party interest.
Tom, I would agree with what you said, but also I'm going to underscore the latter part of what you said. Your point is so well taken, so well thought out, so realistic, so, in my view, an answer to solving a problem. It is so crystal clear that I think you're dead right, but politically, you're dead wrong. It's not going to happen.
Well,
it will not happen for all other reasons, and I think all other reasons, it's not going to happen. It may be the right thing, but you know the reality is how many political leaders really want to solve this problem once and for all. I don't think the numbers are really that great. They are reacting for political reasons. They're building a fence for political reasons. They're reaching out to the Hispanic community. They're trying to save the Republican Party. Or the Democrats are throwing things in. Well, let's have gay and lesbian relationships in there. Let's deal with our constituents. Let's make it even more difficult for the Republicans to cross over and get this thing passed. This is an issue that it will be resolved. There will be a vote. One side will win and one side will lose. But you know what? I don't expect significant changes in the way illegal immigration is dealt with in the country.
Bruce?
Notwithstanding the law. Yes, Tom. Last word.
One last thought. And that's why I wanted to approach the subject again tonight. And that is that if enough of your listeners were to call their senators and their representatives and say, you know, forget about the fence. I mean, I agree with your one guest there who said for drug reasons, for possibly terrorism across the border, gangs across the border, that type of thing, yes, I can see a fence. But as a practical means of controlling immigration, I think what I propose, and by the way, that would eliminate rounding up people.
But, Tom, here's one other thing. When you say and when you talk about the possibility of a national ID card, you have already turned off from the get-go at least 45% of the people. At
not
least
when you explain 45%. To them what the cost would be for the fence versus the
there
savings
not,
in
there
fraud.
Are not enough people. There are not enough hours. There are not enough radio shows. If they were 24 hours a day for 15 years, you are not going to move the needle that the people in this country are not going to go for a national ID card. We're going to move on. Thanks for your call. Bill in Lebanon, New Hampshire, WNTK. Nice to hear from the Granite State. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. What a sorry stew we get when we're dealing with this appeasing to immigrants for votes. My comment was that here we are, have a president who wants to arm the rebels who are all Al-Qaeda, our sworn enemy. And what I just heard the other day was that if the rebels lose in Syria, the president is going to offer them some kind of asylum in the United States, which really is immigration. This is all crazy of what they're doing. What do your people think about that?
Let's let Salim. We haven't heard from Salim for a while. What do you think about this idea and also what's going on in Syria?
Well, I think I think what should be done is an international conference with all of the proxy powers involved to stop this immediately, because this is such a corrosive and potentially devastating conflict in Syria, because you know it involves this low intensity civil war that's been going on in Islam for many centuries, and if it explodes, it will make that entire region unstable for generations.
Art Sear.
I think President Obama is to be commended for being so cautious about using military force overseas. We Americans have
a
historic propensity, sure, especially when it comes to putting our people in immediate harm's way. I also believe it would be counterproductive. I think the caller makes a very good point. One of the principal in this melange of and very diverse rebel group, Hezbollah, is extremely strong. Should be contrasted with the Arab Brotherhood in Egypt and elsewhere, which is pretty moderate despite their rhetoric. Hezbollah is a very radical organization directly tied to Iran, which is becoming steadily stronger in the region. Hezbollah also fought the Israeli army to a standstill in Lebanon. That's the first time that has ever happened to the Israeli army. These guys are tough, they're effective, they're fanatical, and I think
we've got to be particularly careful.
Maybe
we should have not pulled so quickly out of Iraq and gotten an agreement and kept some people over there.
I don't believe we should have invaded Iraq.
Well,
but
the war is won and we get out.
We didn't have much choice. The Iraqis demanded we leave.
I think that had we done that a little more judiciously and more cautiously, that we might still have some people over there that would be helpful.
The Iraqi elected government has been pretty blunt. The Americans have to go, and we do, at least part of the time, have to respect what people want.
And then part of the problem, too, is, you know, the decision to arm the rebels comes after a very long and protracted investigation on whether or not chemical weapons were used, and we knew the red line was crossed, but then he had no choice. And, you know, where's the comprehensive coalition with, like, Turkey, for example?
Exactly.
Why isn't that happening? We don't go in there alone.
We're going to talk about that when we come back. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Let's go to Bryant, listening to us in Redding, California on KQMS. Nice to hear from Northern California. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, gentlemen and miss. I think what is going on, and I think in one thing regarding Snowden, I think the jury is still out on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, until we get him in court, if we ever do, how much of that is going to even be revealed? Because the government is not going to want to allow him to appear before a jury. Secondly, regarding what President Obama said to Charlie Rose, he said, "I cannot, you know, the NSA cannot listen." He did not say that they cannot collect data. What do you think that little building there in Utah is for? Regarding immigration,
his point also was they cannot listen because of the rule of law. Well, that may be true, but the problem is, does the government or do people within the government sometimes break the law?
They definitely do.
Well, of course they do. Not in any widespread way. But, you know, if you have the ability, the technical ability to do that, at some point, curiosity may get you, and you may want to listen in on someone. Last week on this program, we had all of our guests. I asked them, if they have the ability to listen in on a phone conversation with President Obama, would they do it? Mm-hmm. And everybody said, yeah. Well, that's curiosity. So if the ability is there, those things happen. By the way, I want to follow up. Thank you very much for your call, because the collection of data, it brings us back to something that Stephanie said in the very early part of the program, because before the Edward Snowden NSA story began to dominate news, the big story that appeared to rile up people left and right was the IRS scandal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's now off. That's now on page 10, but it's still going out there.
Right.
And potentially, as the investigations continue to go forward on that and other investigations, Do you think that's still as far as political dynamite, is that the one that still has the most political potential for you?
I think it does, because it's something that affects every American. We all have to deal with the IRS. I think there, it just kind of goes against the grain, regardless of your party or affiliation, it goes against the grain of having government agents domestically making decisions and prying into the goings on of political organizations and religious organizations as well. You know, that's one part of this that's not being reported, is that religious institutions were also being targeted. And I think that in terms of the American psyche and the American values, this is something that's going to continue for a long time.
Salim, do you agree that this is an issue that is left and right and black and white and covers everybody?
I think the IRS scandal, I think was something that has been exaggerated a bit, because it seems to have been contained to really one region. And according to some of the most recently released documents, it was initiated by a guy who classifies himself as a conservative Republican in the Cincinnati Bureau. And so I think much of its political potency has been drained. Not just.
So why would it, so you think a conservative Republican would be looking into Tea Party or Tea Party related or Liberty names in their title more than a liberal Democrat?
Well, no. I mean, I'm just saying that this is the information that has has been revealed. I think they were overwhelmed. You know, with the Citizens United ruling, it provided a new lane for a lot of people to apply for IRS. You know, for tax. Tax benefits and whatnot, and I think they were overwhelmed by the information, and they chose various shortcuts.
Is this just a Cincinnati two guys in Cincinnati?
No, I think that's the way to belittle what's really pretty scandalous, and that is that people sort of say, oh, it's this backwater office in Cincinnati. Well, it was actually the hub and the centralized location in charge for all of these kinds of applications across the entire country. It just happened to be in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm.
Newspapers also today, the McClatchy newspapers primarily, are raising the question about the aggressiveness of the Obama administration to go after leaks. And Art, where do you come down on that? I mean, do you believe that this administration is overly concerned about tracking down leaks? And should they be doing that?
I think it's inevitable in Washington, and I think every president and administration in the White House does it. It's a naturally adversarial relationship with the press that predates Watergate but got a lot worse during the era we were discussing. The administration seems kind of heavy-handed in terms of appearing to target individual
prosecuted
reporters.
Prosecuted more leakers than any other, than all other administrations combined, as a matter of fact.
What do they say, Salim?
Excuse me. They seem rather heavy-handed in targeting individual reporters. So they don't seem as smooth as some earlier ones. I think the George Herbert Walker Bush was a particularly effective president, but he was notoriously anxious and concerned and willing to retaliate concerning leaks within his administration. Excuse me, I interrupted.
Yes, by the way, let me ask.
Sure about
do you
that.
Do you believe that the American people are upset and they want their government to go after leakers?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. They've been doing this since the beginning of time. Yeah. They've been leaking. They've been leaking things to get their stories out. I think the disconnect here and the bad thing for
the next administration, let me finish,
but this was supposed to be the most transparent,
board. Yeah.
This was all going to be different than George Herbert Walker Bush and the other Bushes. And so that's the problem, the political problem.
That's why
they sold something. They're just, it's not happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think because as Art points out, all administrations do this. And they have a vested interest in ensuring that information that doesn't make them look bad gets out. I mean, they all do this. So
you could almost. I mean, it's almost. And I know this is going a little far field. It's almost healthy to have a good relationship with reporters. In my experience, with reporters that you can trust and you can get information out, as long as everybody's being, you know, kind of above board about it and we know kind of the rules of the game, I don't think a lot of people have a big problem with it unless you're throwing people in jail for it after
but,
the fact.
But it's ironic because there are a lot of conservatives who do support this kind of aggressive attack on leakers, and yet they hate Obama so much.
It depends on what you're leaking, and we're leaking national security things.
Yeah,
that's right. But
national
stuff.
Security or an IRS whistleblower? That's
right.
A huge difference.
Right, but I think
they're just taking the opportunity to jump on the president and to use this.
He set himself up. Though.
Yes, he did.
This president seems remarkably thin-skinned.
He was when he was in the Senate here.
Yeah, and there are times when he sounds like he's doing us a favor by being president, and I think that resonates badly with the press. I think he's also, frankly, used to getting a very good press.
Well, and that's so why this summer
he
gets a great press.
Based on my comments this evening, he probably will never be back on this program again. Not that he's been back on since he's been president.
But this the cumulative.
He used to be a regular participant.
He did, that's right. But, you know, he hasn't returned the call for a few
years.
There's
a lot going into the Dumont files as we speak.
I am sure they're recording. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Carlos is listening to us on XM Satellite Radio. Always good to hear from Houston. Go ahead, Carlos.
I wanted to bring up this immigration Crocker Amendment.
Yes.
A lot of people being fooled that this is securing our borders, and it doesn't, because 6 months after this bill passes, all these illegals become legalized, and you don't need a green card when you're legalized. So you can put 100,000 border patrols down the border, and they may never do that, and no one will get a green card. It doesn't matter. They're legalized. So this is a hocus pocus by Rubio and the other seven, and I hope my two senators, well, I know one senator is going to vote against it. I hope the other one, the Rhino Juan Corcoran down here, votes against it. I want this thing defeated.
You know, what are we going to do? You have, 11, 12 million people here.
We don't have
12 million sets of hands.
Carlos, let Pat talk, and then we'll go back to you.
We don't have 12 million sets of handcuffs. We dealt with this in 86 and didn't do it the right way. And I watched the McCain campaign blow up on this issue 5 years ago in the primary. That we have to come up with some kind of solution, or we're going to be talking about this in 10 years. And I think there are more interesting things to talk about. So I think what they propose is reasonable. Let's see if we can get something done. And I commend the people on both sides that are actually addressing this issue.
Who at this moment, thanks very much for your call, Carl. Let me ask, we have Republicans. I want to get a reaction. At this moment in time, I'm not asking you to endorse anyone. Who would you say are the three most likely nominees of the Republican Party in the next presidential election?
Well, Rubio for sure. Paul Ryan in some form. I think he's thrown a lot of leadership.
In some form,
so
okay.
Those two, and
would you add a name?
Whoever it's going to be, I'll give you names quickly, it's going to have to be someone that's removed from the day-to-day Washington stuff. That's why I think Chris Christie, what 72 percent popularity in a blue state. I saw Scott Walker give a speech in Iowa about 3 weeks ago. It was one of the most forward-looking positive speeches I've seen of any Republican. And I got to stay with it. I wish Tim Pawlenty would run again, because I think if he would have gotten through the Iowa caucuses, it would have given us someone who's a problem
Tim
solver.
Pawlenty.
And Bobby Jindal has been reemerging,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
And he's been very strong on a lot of issues lately.
But I think the very upbeat thing from a Republican perspective is we're going to have kind of a newer, fresher face and some people that are problem solvers.
Haven't talked about the women. There's some strong women.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about women when we come back. 1-800-723-8020. And I think about who are the women in that field. For President of the United States on the Republican side, we know one on the Democratic side. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Stephanie, you were going to give some Republican women. We know there's a Democratic woman that's likely to be in this field.
There is?
Yeah, but you know, we saw a little bit of this at the convention, and I think one strong front runner would be Susana Martinez from New Mexico, the governor there, and Nikki Haley, a very, very popular governor out of South Carolina. And those are interesting states, too,
to
be from.
Do you think that a Hispanic woman from New Mexico is going to win a Republican primary?
if she says the right things and she does the right things,
I think any of our nominee this time has to be someone that has a proven track record of success in governing, because that's going to be the differentiator.
Now, you did not mention Rand Paul, which was a name that we talked about on this program a couple of weeks ago when I asked some Republicans. No, you don't give Rand Paul.
I'm not a big fan. He's a little bit like his father. There's a little bit of isolationism in him, a little bit of populism in him that I find a little bit. He doesn't seem to have the big picture sometimes, and I think that's a little bit of what I see. I think, Pat, you and I agree on this.
Winning
one,
a Republican primary doesn't necessarily mean you have to have the big picture.
Right. Well, that, you know, and that's the bigger point, and that's when we were talking about before mm-hmm. about what the party needs to do, and it can't be done like it was done last time. Right. We need to get a nominee that has a broader appeal.
I'm going to ask Salim, mm-hmm. Democrat here. Does Rand Paul, in your view, make a viable case, and could he be a Republican that actually might have some appeal to left of center and African Americans?
Slight. Libertarians always have that kind of questionable appeal. I mean, they on one hand they are alluring because they have liberatory views on things like drug legalization and the prison industrial complex and whatnot, mm-hmm. and those kinds of issues. But on the other hand, they have an anti-government position in which a lot of African Americans look at the government as really the only redress to racist private institutions. And so there's a double-edged sword there when it comes to libertarians like Rand Paul. Rand, I think, differentiates himself from his father because he is much more attuned to the social movements in the Republican Party, much more so than mm-hmm. Ron was. And so he may be more appealing to a broader set of Republican constituents than his father was. But he's still, that whole libertarian ideology is a double-edged sword.
Do you believe, again, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in this program, but given the some of the scandals or certain some of the questionable activities of the administration, and this was before the NSA leaks involving Edward Snowden, the question was asked, Art, will the president ever be able to get back on track? Will he be able to build any kind of a legacy, or is he, frankly, bogged down the rest of the way he's in office?
I don't know. I certainly think there's still time. Presidents have significantly recovered ground, including Ronald Reagan, who had some hard times with Iran-Contra, but recovered in foreign policy with important arms negotiations with the Soviet Union. Every president, except Dwight Eisenhower, since the war, has had a rough time in his second term.
Where is he most likely to score a win on the international stage?
That's a very interesting question. I think one is arms agreements, where there was a very significant arms treaty with the Russians negotiated by State Department professionals, not by the president, not by Hillary Clinton, in December of 2010. That didn't make much news because people weren't much interested. But especially with all the turmoil in the Middle East, a major diplomatic breakthrough. And I think John Kerry is precisely the kind of person who could do that. I think, on reflection, there's a lot to be said for a woman Secretary of State who is high profile and constantly emphasizes attention to women's and human rights. However, she was not involved in the details of diplomacy that traditionally get things done. I think Kerry could do that.
Do you believe that his image has been hurt on the international stage because of the use of drones, because of the defense, obviously, of the NSA story or the NSA programs? Has his reputation been hurt, Salim?
He's being protested. There are protests erupting now in South Africa in anticipation of his trip to Africa at the end of the month. And in fact, there's a group in South Africa that urges him to be arrested because of war crimes, because of the drones and mm-hmm. the militarization of relationships with African countries. The AFRICOM, the new African command that has been increasingly intrusive in various parts of the continent. On the other hand,
does that make him more? Go ahead.
On the other hand, you know, there is there's increasing threats from Islamist groups in parts of Africa, Boko Haram in Nigeria, Al Shabaab in Somalia, and the problems in Mali with Azawad, you know, in Timbuktu, the northern Mali problem.
Is he past the point for you, Salim? Is he past the point where he is going to be able to deliver and live up to the expectations?
I think he's
that
past
so many
the point.
People. He's past the point.
Yeah, I think he's hemmed in. He's hemmed in by the institutions. I think his impulses are being frustrated.
Art, 10 seconds. Do you agree with that answer?
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think he's been a strong executive. I do believe he remains extremely popular, especially in the third world, partly because George W. Bush was so unpopular.
Oh, wait a minute. George Bush did more in Africa than he,
Has nothing to do with specific accomplishment.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Figured I'd set you up.
On that note of disagreement, we want to thank Art Sear from the A.W. Clawson Professor at Carthage College, Salim Muwakkil from In These Times, Stephanie Hitt, always a delight to have you with, Pat Brady, thank you very much, with your new group, Next Generation Public Affairs. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Todd Nebel for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at this same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.